Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. This episode includes my interview with professional basketball player Lacey James, a 6'9 center forward who played with the Windy City Bulls in the 23-24 season, finished last year with the Toronto Raptors 905 team. We talk about his basketball path out of Grand Rapids, Michigan to Northern Illinois to playing overseas. Just some great insights from an incredible individual. Doug and I will hopefully record this weekend or Monday to talk about some Bulls draft prospects, the finals, etc. Just two quick notes before the Lacey chat. This Pacers win in game one of the finals, my goodness. I thought I would never see anything like game one of the Knicks-Pacers series. It's a testament to Halliburton, to Rick Carlisle, who should now be regarded as the best coach in basketball, in my opinion, and the rest of the Pacers. I picked the Thunder in six, but I did not foresee them losing game one. Congrats to the Pacers and to the city of Indianapolis for getting to this point. I am insanely jealous of your current basketball scene. One more note. A lot of people have reached out to me this week with the same question. Fred, are you happy about Tibbs getting fired? Let me be clear. No, I'm not. I don't cheer when someone gets fired unless it's for some truly egregious transgression. That's just bad karma, in my opinion, to celebrate, like, you know, the downfall of others. Tibbs works hard. His teams play hard. There's no question. He's a good coach. None at all. But I don't want to see the Knicks succeed. I have nothing but contempt for that franchise and the fan base. I want no part of a successful New York Knicks team. And although Tibbs is a floor raiser because he plays his best players a ton of minutes, I think he put a lid on the Knicks. And I truly believe there is a better coaching option out there for this specific roster. You know, there's two types of coaches in the NBA, coaches who demand the players to adapt to their system and coaches who adapt their system to the players. So this first type, you can have success with that. Bobby Knight's an example, Tom Thibodeau. You can win that way. It's been done. But in today's NBA, I think the latter is more successful. And the best coaches are the ones who build around the strengths of their talent, which brings me to my nightmare scenario, which is Jay Wright. Jay Wright is the best living coach in basketball. Period. There is an obvious connection between Wright and several of the Knicks players, guys who thrived under him at Villanova. He's a master at building a cohesive unit and creating a system around his talent. That hire would shatter the ceiling Thibodeau clearly hit with this group. And that's not good for the Bulls. Now, the Knicks are the Knicks. They're a poorly run organization. There's always a chance they're going to hire someone inferior, like, you know, Jim Boylan might be taking calls right now. I don't know. And, you know, it's likely they will screw this up. But if they find a way to pry Jay Wright from the broadcast booth and give them the keys to a franchise for the next 3 to 5 years, I'm generally concerned. Like, I do think this team could be a quasi-dynasty in the Eastern Conference, a weak Eastern Conference that has been the lesser of the two leagues for the last 20 plus years. And then, you know, finally, one last note. What's my problem with Tibbs? Why do you feel this way? Well, my answer is, you know, my problem with Thibodeau should be your problem with him. I mean, game six against Boston, the Knicks are up 30, 5 minutes left in the game. The Celtics bench is on the court, and so is Mikal Bridges, the league leader in minutes, standing on the court. OG Anunoby, with a long history of injuries, is on the court. In a game that's over, they're up by over 30 against a team that's clearly surrendered. It's either shockingly dumb and reckless or just blatantly egotistical. Leaving your starters in during garbage minutes suggests one of two things. Either you don't trust your bench to maintain a 30-point lead, which is ridiculous and dumb, or worse, in my opinion, worse, and I think in this case, this is it. You're more worried about the embarrassment of a historic collapse than the well-being of your players. That's not leadership. It's putting your ego ahead of their health. If OG tore an ACL at 4:55 left in that game six, or Mikal did, no one would be questioning the firing of Tom Thibodeau. There's no debate. He overuses his starters. He doesn't trust his bench. He rides his stars into the ground. In today's NBA, that's a recipe for burnout, playoff failure, which happens every year with him. So again, great coach. We saw this happen in Chicago. We saw it happen in Minnesota. Now it just happened in New York. Eventually, there is a shelf life for Tom. And great guy from what I hear, everyone who's ever met him. And I do respect his work ethic and his coaching ability. But that issue that he's never been able to change or adapt or move on is, in the end, just irritates me most. And my primary reason for why I don't want him to the Bulls. I don't want him anywhere near the org. I wish him all the best making $30 million next 3 years for doing nothing. So on to the interview with Lacey James. I hope you enjoy it. Go Bulls.
Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Yeah. Believe it. Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby. Yeah. Yeah. Cruising through the city where the legends play. Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line. Talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind.
Rolling down the lane in the big red bus. See Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss. It's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus, your go-to ride for all things Chicago Bulls. I'm C-Red Fred, and today we have a very special passenger on the Big Red Bus, a Michigan native, NIU alum, hardworking big man who's taken his game across the globe and back again. I can't thank you enough for jumping on the bus, Lacey James. Lacey, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on the bus. I mean, it's not often that we get a professional basketball player on the show, so you're already bringing it up a level for us. But I can't wait to talk to you about your career, some of the people that had an impact on your life, and you know, thank you again for giving us the time to do that. So let's start out with the first question for you, a little bit get into your basketball journey and pro career. Take us back to your roots in Grand Rapids. When did you first fall in love with the game of basketball, and who were your biggest influences while you were growing up?
I would say, you know, I always, when people ask me when you started playing basketball or what was the age, I would say I came out of the womb with a basketball just because, you know, I always loved the game. I love sports in general, football, you know, that was a big thing when I was playing recess and things, but basketball, I always wanted to just save, you know, all year round from travel to school, wherever school I was at. So I would just, you know, ever since I can walk and, you know, I would just love playing, love watching. You know, just the people that influenced me were just anybody that, you know, I was in front of that day, you know, from if I was watching an NBA game or, you know, just any of my family members, you know, playing basketball. So I just, you know, anybody who was just dribbling a basketball that I just love the game and just love watching. It just always inspired me.
Your parents were athletes. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yep. They met on the basketball court. They sat in college. And then also my uncle, he actually, on my mom's side, he played in Germany. My dad played basketball, and then my mom played basketball, and she had six brothers and sisters. They all got scholarships in college for basketball, and one of them went to Germany and played with Dirk Nowitzki as well. So on Dirk's team when he was in Germany before he made the jump to the NBA, and another one played professional as well. So it's in my blood. It's like a what do you call it, thoroughbred, you know. It's in your blood, and you know, I guess it's just the love of the game.
Are you a Bulls fan or Pistons fan? I assume growing up in Michigan you had to love the Pistons.
No, I wasn't either of them. I was actually just a LeBron fan when he was on the Cavs.
Oh yeah.
And I, you know, the last name, the initials, all that, it was just all LeBron. And so, you know, when he was playing the Pistons with, they had Chauncey and Tayshaun Prince and Rip Hamilton and Rasheed Wallace and Ben Wallace and Lindsey Hunter and all those guys, you know, I always loved watching, but I was rooting for it. When I was in Michigan, I was rooting for the Cavs. So
how about football wise, really quick, as an aside, since you were a football fan, was it the Lions?
Football wise, I liked the, I liked two teams growing up. I did like the Lions, but it was a hard, you know,
like.
A lot of people see they're winning now, but it wasn't always like that. It was hard to, you know, root for them because they're always losing them. But I liked two teams. It was the Philadelphia Eagles and the Baltimore Ravens. They had Ray Lewis and Joe Flacco then. And then the Eagles, they had Donovan McNabb and Jackson out there. So I like football and just watching in general, but those are the two teams that they were on. I was rooting for them.
Yeah, Donovan McNabb went to high school in the south side of Chicago at Mount Carmel. Know his background very well. So you played at both Rider and NIU. What did that transition teach you, and how did your time at NIU shape your identity as a player and a leader?
I think what really shaped me and made me what I learned was just time management, especially in college with time management of either at Rider or NIU, you know, on and off the court, time management of getting your workout in, getting your classes in, or getting your treatment in, or also if you want to, you know, get some food here and there, or you want to get a late night workout, So just being both and both areas, it just taught me the time management, and I really got it down. I was professional when I was in college, or, you know, I had it in high school, but I think college really, you know, have that schedule and have that thought of it. That's when I was really professional when I was in college, just because of the time management and how I was treating it.
So how did the recruitment process come for you coming out of high school and then going on to college?
So in high school, I was offered over 27 Division I scholarships. I was blessed with that. Thank God.
Wow.
For that. And so I was recruited pretty highly, and I had a lot of scholarships, and I just wanted to, I always told myself that I kind of wanted to go later on in probably my senior year. I told myself I wanted to go out of state for college just to experience and just to get a new feel. And so, you know, Ryder came along, and, you know, I did my research, and I thought it was just it would be a good fit. And, you know, went out to the East Coast, and then my path led me to, back to the Midwest. And so I came back to NIU, and that was when when you transferred, you had to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. And so then I don't have it now where I just missed it, where you could transfer wherever you want, put your name in the portal. That was when you had to sit out. So I had to sit out a year when I was at NIU. Before I played. So, you know, that was hard, just sitting on the sideline during games and in the whole season. But yeah, the recruiting process in high school, it was a blessing. A lot of college coaches called, a lot of, you know, just people calling and wanting me to work out or coming to my games from school to travel ball. So I would just say it was a fun and a great experience.
What year did you end your career ended at NIU?
2020.
Oh my gosh, COVID hits, right? So
yeah, COVID, yeah, yep.
So can you talk about that process a little bit? What a year for your career to end in college, and how it led to becoming a professional basketball player?
Yeah, it was a crazy, well, like everyone else, it was a crazy year. We were in Cleveland where our conference tournament was at. We had a bye because we won our conference. So we were like really, you know, excited. We were going to go in our minds. Well, my mind for sure, we were going to the big dance and playing the NCAA tournament. And, so it was, you know, exciting times leading up to that. And all of a sudden when we were in Cleveland, it was a couple hours during shoot around, a couple hours before our game. And they said, no, you cannot, go to the arena. And then all of a sudden we see online and on social media on ESPN, it was like a domino effect, how all these conferences were just saying they're shutting down their conference tournament. And ours, the Mid-American Conference, the MAC, it hadn't said anything yet. And we were just kind of like hoping and praying that, you know, maybe ours got lucky and they didn't do it. Man. But ours was one of the last to get shut down. We were at the Cavaliers facility, and it was just, it was real devastating. I was real emotional because it was, you know, my last year. You know, I didn't want it to end like that, and we had high hopes of going to the dance, so that was tough. And then we got back to campus, and a lot of things were shut down, and so we had to go home. And then also, too, with the process of graduating, they didn't have the ceremony, and you couldn't walk, so they had to mail you your cap and gown, and then all that. So it was like everyone else, it was a different experience. I was just blessed that I was able to play college basketball and then also graduate with my bachelor's in communications. Mm-hmm. So it was just a crazy experience though. But, yeah, looking back, I would say, you know, disappointing just because of how it ended, but, you know, it was just, yeah, look at it as a blessing happened for you.
I can't imagine the heartbreak when you consider that, you know, every basketball player probably has a dream of playing in the NCAA tournament, and you're right there. I didn't know that you were number one in the MAC that year. So obviously if you win that conference tournament, that's an automatic bid, right? You're going to the dance. And to have to have that dream taken away had to be just devastating. So, wow, I was not aware of that. So let's go over then the next few months. What happens then? Like, were you getting feelers? Were you getting people who were starting to say, hey, we're interested in you trying out or playing as a professional? Were you aware of opportunities? When did those first opportunities show themselves to you in 2020?
Yeah, they showed themselves right away, actually, because a lot of teams were interested, and a lot of teams came to my college games and things like that. But it was just hard because they didn't know the future of when games are starting up, some games are shut down. And we were supposed to do, you know, work like a regular, you know, workouts, draft workouts, invitations, but nobody was able to go in any practice facility, arena, or anything like that. So we couldn't do workouts. And so I was in the Chicago area when I graduated. I just stayed in the area, stayed in the city. And it was a blessing too, because I was able to do my draft process through video. And a couple of us guys were able to get in the gym and work out and stay in shape for all those times and days and weeks. And then we had to Zoom our draft workout in the gym we were at. And so we had to do that. And then I had some interviews, one-on-one interviews with GMs and stuff. And that was the time when they were talking about the bubble for the G League and the NBA. But then they got word that only teams that had a winning record could go to the bubble. And so a lot of teams didn't qualify. And so some of the teams that were interested in me didn't qualify for the bubble when they were going to bring me in with the bubble, but they didn't qualify because they didn't win a winning record because the league didn't want everybody, I guess, to go to the bubble. Mm-hmm. And so that's when London came in and the British Basketball League. And so that presented an opportunity and, I just took it. I said, all right, you know, I never played basketball overseas and let's just do it and see how it goes. And hopefully it turned out great. It was a blessing. I got player of the week. I came in right away and, had double doubles. And it was a fun experience. Some of the city, it was kind of like here over in the States, it was shut down. But towards the end of my time there, they opened the city back up. So I got to see some of the sights and got to travel a little bit with some of the guys around the area. So it was a good experience. And I still keep in touch with a lot of those guys today. So it was a blessing.
What months are we talking about when you're playing in Britain? After COVID, it sounds like, well, I guess we were still kind of going through it, right? A lot of stuff was closed down. So like,
So
what months exactly do you recall that this whole took place where you left for Britain?
So I can break it down to you. So in March is when the college and everything shut down and then people didn't know. And so they had probably a month or two. I think it was when they had they started the bubble, maybe you want to say, June, July-ish, maybe July through September, they had the bubble and then the season, ended like at a weird time. And then around September, October, just workouts and things like that, like I said, and Zoom interviews. And then it was definitely around the beginning of 2021, I got word. And then in February or end of January, early February, I went over to London. I stayed for 4 months.
So do you feel that COVID hurt your progress as a basketball player in terms of your development?
No, I don't think it hurt or slowed down or did anything. I think it was everything was meant to be and everything happened like it was. And I think just the process of everything, of what I went through on and off the court with COVID and how things were going on, how things were shut down, part of the journey. So, no, I don't think anything affected my basketball career at all.
You played for the Windy City Bulls, the Texas Legends, and now the Raptors 905. How do you stay mentally sharp and motivated today? Like what are some of the secrets you could pass on to not just to, you know, for everyone listening, but, you know, young players? What would you say? What helped you? What time period out of all these places that you've gone to did you really, would you say you enjoyed playing for the most?
Yeah, I would say I would say two things that really keep me mentally strong and physically prepared is my faith is number one, and then just the love of the game I have. Because in the professional business, a lot of good people, a lot of bad people, the game is, well, it's 80% mental and 20% physical. And a lot of things in professional business happens off the court as well. And you have to be, that could affect your game on the court. But my faith is number one, what keeps me sharp and what keeps me tough, because it's, and the definition of faith, believing without seeing. And that can go from religious view, or that can go from something in your life, you know, that you maybe not don't see yet. And so, you know, when things were happening with COVID, or things were happening with going from, like you said, the different teams, you know, you just have to believe in yourself and have faith that everything's going to work out. Maybe you don't see it that day or maybe you won't see it the next day, but it's gonna come, and it always does, and always, everything always happens for you, and you might not see the good in it at that time, but it's really gonna happen for you and happen the best for you. So my faith is what really keeps me mentally tough and physically able, and then just the love of it. If you don't really love this game, then the ups and downs, you won't want to go through. It's like having a wife or having kids, having a mother or a father, or a family member, brother and sister. If you really love them, you'll do whatever it takes for them or for their life or for their health. That's just the love you have for them. But if you really don't love something, then, you won't go through the downs. You won't go through the ups, and then a down comes. You won't go through all that roller coaster ride just because your love isn't there and all that. So I would say my faith and love, if you don't have those, you won't have a successful life. And that's what really keeps me going.
What's one moment from your pro career so far that you consider to be your welcome to professional basketball moment? And then also, what's your greatest moment so far?
I would say Welcome to professional basketball. My moment was off the court when I had my first training camp with the Knicks and the Westchester Knicks. And I came and I went into the locker room and, dreaming, as a kid, you always dreamed of being in those facilities or just having a locker like that. And when I got to the locker room, they had my name and my number. And then I had like a loop. It's like a laundry loop with socks and shorts and all that, on it. If people don't know what a loop is. And it had the NBA logo embroidered on the socks. It had it on the compression shorts. It had it on the shirt. And I kind of just had to I'm blessed, because as a kid, growing up, you would do, if someone had a NBA logo on a shirt or a backpack or a sock, you were like, give me those. I'll play you one-on-one for those. Or where'd you get that from? What store? And to see that with my name on it and just get it for free, that was just something that was just like, okay, wow, this is a blessing. And then also like, okay, I'm here. Now the journey really begins. Let's get started. So the work really begins. So it was just that was my welcome to the professional basketball or anything, just that in life. And I'll always remember that. And then also just something that I'm proud of is, just how I'm still playing and how I'm blessed and I'm healthy with my body, how I take care of my body. And, a lot of guys I see that I either grew up with, or maybe some guys I used to work out with or be around, some of them, went through ups and downs that I know, and, they just kind of gave it up, or maybe they just didn't really love the game. Or some guys I remember playing travel ball with or against, I see them, either fall off, or maybe they, still trying, or, it's just, I'm proud of myself, and, God has blessed me with my 6'9" body, and then also just my health and just the desire and the love I have for the game.
As someone who suited up for the Windy City Bulls, what was it like being part of our Bulls G League system?
Yeah, it was a blessing, because, Chicago, I feel, is one of the best cities in the world. And just to be a part of a Chicago team, sports team, whether it's basketball, football, hockey, baseball, is great, because the fan base is always going to be there, ready to cheer you on. And if you're not having a good game, they'll let you know. And if you're having a good game, they'll let you know. So it was just fun just to be in the city and in the suburbs and just around, and even going to the airport, wearing some gear like that. People show you love and people will appreciate and just be in awe just because you play sports in the city. So, or in the state. So it was a blessing to be a part of, and the organization, a lot of good people in the organization and relationships. And when I see them around, like when I played the Windy City actually when I was in Toronto. And, when I saw them, it was nothing but all love and, some good people there. And so it was just a blessing to be a part of.
If you could model your game after one Bulls legend, past or present, who would it be and why?
I want to say one person. I don't look at one person to try to model my game after. I always take bits and pieces of everybody. A Bulls legend like Dennis Rodman, just his energy and his instincts of rebounding and defense. And then Michael Jordan, just his focus and his competitiveness and his work ethic. And then Scottie Pippen, if you can look at him, his defense and his versatility on both ends of the floor. And then, if you put Steve Kerr in there with shooting, And then also, you know, you can go down the list of, guys from the older times, or, you know, guys from, when I was kind of younger, of Luol Deng, also, Todd Gibson, and a lot of those guys, you know, Derrick Rose, you know, Chicago legend, you know, just his speed and his finishing ability. So I love watching film and YouTube videos of highlights and interviews, and I always just take bits and pieces of each player and put it into my game, because, you know, there's not going to be another Lacy James, and, you know, it's everyone is one of one, and so you do your own abilities and you do your own game, but if you can learn little pieces from here and there and put it in yourself, then, you know, that's a good thing in my mind.
You've been active in giving back to the community, and how important is that to you, and what kind of impact do you hope to make off the court?
That's my, you know, that's almost my everything. You know, I was blessed, so now I have to be a blessing to others. And so, you know, that's the why I work so hard every day, and why I want to, you know, build up my platform even more, because, you know, I want to be somebody that I wish I saw or had when I was growing up. A professional player coming back, or professional player giving tips on and off the court, and being there for somebody, and whether it's an adult or a kid, you know, just being an inspiration to somebody. And if I could make one person's day or change one person's life, you know, I did my job. I don't want to be, you know, known as a basketball player. I want to be known as a person that got blessed and went out and blessed somebody else. It's very important to me, just because, you know, a lot of people take being a professional athlete or just, you know, having a blessed life for granted and not share it. You know, that's what we're supposed to do. And if, you know, if I can do that, and it just makes me feel good also, you know, and so that's why I just love seeing the kids' faces and even adults' faces. And a lot of people, you know, when they talk to me or around me, they get intimidated, or, you know, they might be shy or something, just because of, you know, either, you know, who I am or my height or anything. But, you know, I just want to, you know, be an open book or be a helpful hand to anybody and everybody. Cause, like my faith, you know, you're supposed to see God in everybody, you know, it's like in the Bible where it says, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. You know, I was homeless and you gave me a place to stay, and so on. But that's why I always remember, you know, giving back and the platform that I have and the platform that I'm continuing to build up.
What advice would you give to a kid who's listening today, who dreams about playing pro basketball, especially one who might not be heavily recruited or, you know, might not have the greatest athletic skills?
I would just say, just believe in yourself and have fun. You know, if you believe in yourself and you have fun with the game, then the game of basketball, where everything else will take care of itself. And you just have to believe in yourself and believe in hard work. You know, you can work as hard as you want, but if you don't have confidence in that hard work or in applying it to the game or applying it to that team you're on, then, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. So just believe in yourself first, and then also have fun, because, you know, it's the game, it's a sport. It's like they say, what do they say? It's a kid's game. But, you know, you also just have to have fun with it, because, you know, don't take it for granted. You know, you can take it for granted one day and the next day it'll be gone. So just believe, the two things I would tell any kid or anybody, middle school, high school, college, wherever age you are, young or older, I would just tell them just to believe in themselves and have fun.
A few more quick ones, and Lacy, I can't thank you enough for your time today. This has been great.
It's all good. I'm having a great conversation.
So who's the best player you've ever played against?
I would say Lacy James. Every day I'm looking in the mirror, and every day I have to compete against that person, Lacy James, because, you know, I played thousands and millions of guys from, like I said, in London to here in America, and every state, you know, we travel to, you know, there's guys that can play and here, you know, there, but at the end of the day, you're really facing yourself, because you know the hard work you put in, and you also know the level of competitiveness and the level of success on the court you want to get to. And the only person that's stopping you is not the person on the other team. It's the one that you see in the mirror every day. So, I would say Lacy James. He's, to answer your question of who's the best and who's the hardest player you play against, it's the same answer.
Who's the best coach you've ever played for, and what made them great?
The best coach, I had a lot of great coaches. My high school coach, he was really good. You know, he taught me, you know, a lot. And then a lot of, you know, my college coaches were good. So, and then professionally, you know, you have like a lot of good guys that are professional, especially a lot of young guys that were coming up, especially in the G League, where G League coaches are, you know, in the same position you are, because they're on the come up as well. And they want to be, everyone wants to call up just like the players. So from head coach to assistant coaches to trainers. So there's a lot of guys that just work hard and that are really just wanted and put the extra time in.
And from your experience, how much of an impact does coaching have at the G League and professional level? And can a great coach really swing the outcome of games, or would you say it's definitely more on the talent?
No, I think a coach is a big part of, especially at the G League level or professional level. I feel that the coach is a big part of it, because the coach is either there to give you confidence or take your confidence away. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're a team, and the coaches are there to, you know, teach you and lead you and tell you from right and wrong. But, you know, I would say it's a high percentage that, you know, coaches matter, because they're part of the team and they're on the boat too. And, you know, if one person falls off or one person sinks, then, you know, there's people looking over the shoulder because there's a problem. So everyone has to be on page, and everyone has to be ready to go, and no matter what.
What do you think the most important skills are right now as an NBA player? Like, what's the league and the G League really looking at in terms of what do you bring to the table?
I feel like an important skill to have is conditioning, because especially in the G League, where, you know, the numbers, the final score numbers are really high, and the high, you know, in the hundreds almost every game now with the G. But I no matter where you're at, NBA or G League, it's conditioning. If you're not in shape, then, you know, you're going to get exposed. And if you're not in shape, then you can't do what you can do in practice. And so, you know, I feel like the number one is, and conditioning is a skill, because you work on it and you also, you know, you train at it. Not a lot of people have it. So I would say conditioning and being in shape is the most important skill in my eyes.
I know you had a heart condition. What happened?
Well, I got a red flag when I was in training camp. And so that sidelined me for a little bit, and they had to do with the, you heard, the NBA Fitness to Play panel.
Yes.
It's with, I want to say Chris Bosh started it, when he had his condition, and they had to do a fitness to play panel where sides had to come together to make sure the athlete was okay to play. Mm-hmm. And so they had to have a panel and doctors and legal assistance and everything like that, and they had to come together. So mine took a whole season. So I had to sit out a whole season, which was, I want to say, it was definitely what I was expecting, but, you know, it happened for me. But it took a whole season, and I was blessed to be able to get cleared by the fitness play panel. And it was just a lot of learning experience, but, you know, I'm blessed to be able to go on the court now. I never had any symptoms. I still don't have any symptoms. It was just like a bigger and larger heart. So, everything blessed. And, you know, health is number one. Can't do anything in life without health. So, it was just a blessing to get that clearance.
Well, Lacey, I can't thank you enough for coming on the Big Red Bus. I mean, when you walk into a room, I met you obviously at church, and, you know, right away everybody see you're 6'8", I believe, right? 6'9".
You look 6'9".
6'9". You look every inch of 6'9". I'm 6 foot. And I was like, wow. And, I was blessed to have, you know, Father Greg introduce me to you and your wonderful mom. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to talk to my son too, who's a varsity basketball player. And I've can count on one hand a number of professional athletes I've met where I was that impressed with your demeanor and the time that you spent with people, that it says a lot that you're willing to do, give that time, which is your most valuable asset to people. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you and your family and your son, you know, and then just seeing people that, you know, go to church and then, you know, just connecting through basketball too. You know, those two things in common, those are two biggest things in my life. So, when you have that, when someone like you has that in common, you know, you just connect right away and have good conversations like we had and like we're having now. So I just thank you for the time and, you know, having me on. And you have some great questions, man. You know, a lot of questions that stumped me. So, you know, those must be some good questions.
Well, thank you so much, Lacey.